WHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The man accused of attempting to kill President Trump at a Florida golf course last year is found guilty on all five federal charges. Ryan Ruth represented himself in court. Minneapolis criminal defense attorney Joe Tamburino.
He never raised any issue about mental illness, if he was or was not mentally ill. And it took the jury less than 3 hours to convict on all counts. So I'm not surprised at all.
Jimmy Kimmel Live returns to the air tonight after his suspension over controversial comments about Charlie Kirk's murder. ABC affiliate owners Sinclair and Nexstar say they will not air it. CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti.
Sinclair has previously said in order to bring back the show to their programming, they want an apology on air from Kimmel. That seems unlikely, but...
President Trump tells the U.N. General Assembly the push to fight the climate crisis through investing in renewable energy.
It's the greatest con job ever perpetrated on the world, in my opinion.
He's urging nations to buy American fossil fuels. CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
The Brewers lose on the Late Show. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Padres beat the Brewers late last night, 5-4 in 11 innings. Out on the West Coast in San Diego, with the win, the Padres able to secure a spot in the postseason. Brewers manager Pat Murphy asked after the game, what did he think about his guys' effort battling into extra innings, even though they've already won their division?
Fantastic. I mean, it was great. It was great. We did so many great things. And I'm proud of our guys for not... just showing up and saying, well, we've clinched a bye, we won the division, and showing up and playing as hard as they did. That touched me. I mean, I really thought it was special. I know guys are disappointed we didn't win. I am too.
NFL. The Packers getting ready to play the Cowboys this week on Sunday Night Football. Green Bay, the Vikings, and Lions now all with a record of 2-1 after Detroit beat the Ravens last night 38-30 on Monday Night Football. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
You know that tune. You're a star. You know stuff. Why not win stuff? Maybe it's stuff about TV or movies, but still, you shine at useless information. And WFHR and Culver's want to reward you.
Welcome back.
Join the morning show Fridays for a chance to win one value basket and a kid's meal. Be our next superstar with Culver's Star of the Day every Friday at 97.5 FM WFHR.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Hope. Yep, going to talk a little bit about hope because, well, Kimmel's back on the air. Now, look, I don't watch Kimmel's show. I see clips, like Jimmy Kimmel, think he's funny, think he's somebody that, you know, was great to watch. Never really watched the show. But he's back. And why is he back? Because of you. Because of everyone who said, hey, this ain't right. Everyone who talked to neighbors, talked to friends, wrote to letters to the editor, canceled your subscriptions, threatened to cancel your subscriptions. This is what solidarity looks like. This is power of the people. And in this instance, it was about Jimmy Kimmel. And that's great. Important. Want our Kimmel. Now we take this momentum and move it to other things. You know, like healthcare, like better wages, hours, opportunities, an economy that works for everyone, education that's affordable. We can do anything if we want to. We have a lot of people who have courage for billionaires. Not so much for working people. And this is, again, one of these moments where you go, this is what solidarity looks like, my friends. This is what winning really looks like. And you go, but Rick, it's just a late night talk show host. What's the big deal? The big deal is You forced a big company who had a lot of interest in kind of pushing him aside to say, we care about our customers. We may not have a company to save if our customers all leave. And the thing is this is a spark of a moment. And again, I view this as something very small. Understand. Again, I like Jimmy Kimmel. I thought he was funny with Carolla years ago. I actually liked what Carolla had to say about him. You know, the fact that even somebody like Adam Carolla, who I don't agree with anything on, said, look, he's a good guy. We don't agree politically. He's still a good guy. But for me, this is an opportunity. Because there are a lot of people out there who reach out and say, you know, I'm in despair. I fear for my country. I have a very dear friend who, you know, we text often, and there's this, you know, I don't know what's going to happen for my daughter and for her generation. And I understand that frustration. And for this person, it's almost debilitating. And look, he's a very good friend, and I want him to do well, but he needs to do something. And I've had other people text me the same kind of despair. What do we do? And I said, look, it's not just big things. It's not, you know, getting the sign and marching in the streets. It's every little bit of small things. It's maybe canceling your subscription to whatever streaming service ABC had. It's maybe just, I'm not going to participate in this, or I'm going to spend my dollars elsewhere, or I'm going to tell my friends that, you know, this is wrong. And this is going to start conversations. And we make that part of the conversation of the country. This is an opportunity. This is an opportunity to start saying, you know what? We demand better. Now, over the weekend, you had a president who, speaking at Charlie Kirk's memorial, which again, you know, horrible tragedy. Nobody that I know and that I would want to deal with is happy about this man dying. But I fear what's coming out of it. The kind of organizing, the kind of hatred, kind of demonization. This is a place to organize around stopping. But Donald Trump said something at the memorial that every American should be quite fearful of. He was talking about Charlie Kirk, and he said he did not hate his opponents. He wanted the best for them. That's where I disagree with Charlie, Donald Trump said. I hate my opponents, and I don't want the best for them. I already knew that. He didn't have to say it. His leadership style already shows that. His policy direction already shows that. He's the living embodiment of that statement. He just articulated it in a very straightforward way. Understand. I don't want to see bad things happen to people. In fact, I want the best for everyone. Because here's the thing. Here's the dirty little secret. If you do badly, chances are I'm going to do badly as well. If you do well, chances are I'm going to do well. We all do well. What's that phrase? We do better when we all do better. The difference here, and again, I go back to Trump and the policy of the Republican Party at this point, is the handful do really, really well. Not just better, amazingly well, at the expense of everyone else. The people that they hate, the opponents, which is the entire working class, even the people who buy his merchandise and wear his hats and his shirts and all that. Eventually, he turns on you because that's who he is. It's his nature. And this is a moment, I hope, for working class people to wake up to the reality that life isn't getting better. The inflation isn't coming down. Job opportunities certainly aren't becoming more plentiful. And the tariffs that he said were going to be the end-all, be-all, fix-all, not working. In fact, rural America, as I talked about yesterday on the program, they're struggling. And, you know, last night got a bunch of responses from people going, yep, I'm one of them. I'm in Iowa, or I'm in Wisconsin, or I'm in rural Pennsylvania, or I'm in rural Ohio, and nothing. The economy is stagnant. And we're on the verge of losing. This is a moment. And again, I go back to the Kimmel thing is a victory. Celebrate the victories. But understand, it's a small victory. But the important part of it is knowing that, realizing your power. And this is where the right understands it. If you listen to Stephen Miller's speech, which was better in its original German, scary, scary speech, you realize that they are organizing around the idea of destroying what you, me, and others like us love about this country. And they want to make America in their greatness, which is not a democracy, which is not one where people can rise with their talents. But moreover, you know, how well connected, how loyal you are. So for me, the hope here, for everybody asking the question, what can I do? What should I be doing? How do we save our democracy? How do we save this country that we love? One battle at a time. One Jimmy Kimmel at a time. Stopping one bad thing from happening in, let's say, Oklahoma, that wants to force every university to put some kind of weird plaque to honor Charlie Kirk, whom they've never met, and who was a divisive figure, to tear this country apart. It's who they are. It's what they want. Our job is to make sure that we come together. And look, I reach out to my red hat friends. If you think what happened to Kimmel was wrong, there's an opportunity to start going, hey, yeah, we have some common ground. If you think the economy is not doing as well as it could for you and your family and your community, we have an opportunity to come together. If you think that this administration and its fascistic policies and the talk that's coming out about hating the enemy, if you think that's too far, if you think that's wrong, here's an opportunity for us to talk. There are lots of opportunities to talk to people we disagree with. I do it all the time. In fact, my lefty friends beat me up for me. You don't have any red hat friends. Yeah, I do. And we disagree about everything political. But I still think they're good people. So bring the hate mail. And we got to figure out how in this country we're going to navigate these waters if we're going to stop the organizing that's happening. If we're going to stop demonizing the others. If we're going to stop allowing them to pit us against each other. We got to figure out how we're going to talk to each other. I want to hear your thoughts. Hate email to the top of the page. Quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So remember, Donald Trump said day one, was going to get inflation under control. Prices were going to come down. Eggs. What was that about eggs being like a buck a dozen, or was it 99 cents? And gas was a buck a gallon. Either way, there were lots of promises made, lots of predictions on how well the economy is doing and how it would do under a Trump presidency and his policies. And yet this past weekend, as I talked about yesterday on the show, lots of farmers and rural community folks not pleased about what's going on, and here to share some thoughts on, well, you know, how the economy is doing, especially for working people. I've asked Stuart Applebaum to come share some thoughts. Stuart is the president of RWDSU, the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union. You can check out their website at rwdsu.org. Stuart, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, it's good to see you. It's really good to see you. You talk about Trump and what he promised us about making things affordable again. It was a lot of garbage, like a lot of stuff he told us at the time. I think the real problem was that too many people believed him, and it was a fraud. And now I think people are starting to see the consequences of Donald Trump becoming president in terms of the economy. He told us that he could make prices lower. He hasn't. He's done, in fact, the opposite. And what he's done with tariffs have just made things worse for all of us. And I think the polls are showing that people are beginning to understand that. I saw a poll from the Washington Post today that said Trump is now underwater by 19 points on his handling of the economy, and underwater by 30 points with his handling of the tariffs. And just to give you a comparison, in October of 2020, that same poll showed Trump up 14 points. What he's been a disaster when it comes to the economy. And what he's been doing is forcing the rest of us to pay more for less while he's been rewarding the billionaire friends of his.
Yeah, no, we learned in the first term the only thing that he really truly cared about and that Republicans really cared about was tax breaks for the very wealthy and corporate America. And the, you know, Trump 2.0 is following the same playbook, only now we're going after enemies a lot more and talking about hating opponents much more, but still not making lives better. And I see this as an opportunity not just for the labor movement to get workers to join and form unions, especially as the attacks of this administration have ramped up, but also for Democrats to get into rural communities like I was in over the weekend and give people the kind of hope that they thought they were getting from Donald Trump with some policies that are going to actually be helpful.
People want to hear what it is that we will do. I think that's important. And I think it's important for working people to stand together. I don't care how people voted. I think we all agree on what's happening to the economy. That's what we need to be talking about. That's what we need to be focusing on. Even the federal chair, Jerome Powell, who was a Trump appointee, has warned that the job market is no longer solid and that job gains have slowed as unemployment is rising. It is a bad economy, and we have to come together on something like that. Because I think that the one thing that working people have to protect themselves is each other. We've got to join together. Our voices have to be heard. We have to make demands on what it is we are expecting.
No, absolutely. And I point to what happened on Monday with Jimmy Kimmel being, I guess, reinstated. Because there was a mass outcry. There were people on all sides of the aisle going, hey, I may not like Jimmy Kimmel, but this is an infringement of government on private industry, on free speech, on all kinds of things. And this was an opportunity, I believe, whether you like Kimmel, don't like Kimmel, thought the FCC was right, think Trump's right, any of that. This, to me, is the show that there's still power in solidarity, power in we the people, when we come together and demand something. And I'd like to see us demand some things that are good for us, too.
You're absolutely right. That's what unions know how to do, to demand for what it is we want and what we need. And the demands over the First Amendment and what was happening to the First Amendment, as demonstrated by what was going on with Jimmy Kimmel, our demands were so loud, our voices were so loud all over the country that this was unacceptable, that they had to do something. And now today we hear that Jimmy Kimmel is coming back. We need to make our voices heard. If I could mention something, I learned today that a great labor leader, Leo Girard, who was president of the steelworkers, passed away. And what I remember that Leo would always tell us, and I have a quote here from Leo, and it's that if we fight together, I can't guarantee we will win, but if we don't fight for justice, I can guarantee we will lose. And I think that's so important for us to remember.
And I'm glad you brought up Leo, because Leo, I consider Leo a friend. He was a friend of the show for years as the president of the steelworkers. And our thoughts, our prayers, our remembrance of Leo Girard are with him, his family. And, as we say, may he rest in power.
Yes. Someone who came from Sudbury, Ontario, to become an amazing voice throughout North America.
And interestingly enough, someone who came from what was a company town that we're attempting to recreate in this country years later. And I think it's, again, my problem is I think we didn't learn our history. I think we certainly didn't learn labor's history. And we're going to have to, we're going to have to relive a huge part of the nightmare that was, you know, the Gilded Age, the robber baron era, you know, my great-great-grandparents era of living through company towns, company script. My grandchildren are going to live that kind of lifestyle if we don't do something today.
I always see it that our job, our responsibility is always the same. Sometimes the conditions are tougher than other times, like they are now. But our job is to speak up, to make our voices heard. Our job is to fight, no matter what the conditions are. Sometimes conditions are better, sometimes conditions are worse. But it never changes our responsibility. We have to express outrage constantly at injustice that we see around us.
I absolutely agree. But here's the thing. And, you know, I look at the Kimmel situation as a victory for we the people, you know, and not a huge victory, but a sign that if we come together and we amplify our voices together, we can make change. Now I'd like to take this little bit of power that we now realize we have and actually start making lives better, because the other side, in my view, doesn't run out of time or money. They've got think tanks and they dominate most of our media in pushing us in divisive ways, in ways that tear us apart. And I fear, you know, over the weekend we saw the memorial for Charlie Kirk, which was a horrible tragedy, his death. But my fear is the real tragedy is going to come out of it, you know, as you have a president saying he hates his opponents, as you have people who are pushing us in a direction to tear us even further apart. I'd like to see a way that we, maybe find ourselves back together, shoulder to shoulder, arm in arm in the streets together.
Well, we have to. There is no other way. We have to. I mean, it's the president is supposed to bring us together. That's not happening. If he's not doing it, then we're going to have to do it without him. And we're able to do stuff. I mean, I'm really excited about Jimmy Kimmel. It shows that our voices can be heard and we can still do stuff and we can still win. I know in my union, we negotiated our very first contract with Barnes & Noble anywhere in the country, our first contract with any Barnes & Noble. And we did it after Trump took office. We're fighting now with REI. We did something amazing. We defeated REI's candidate for the board of directors of that company. I haven't heard that happening elsewhere. And we did it. And now REI, after Trump became president, has entered serious negotiations with us for a first contract at 11 REI stores.
No, that's huge. But the sad reality is, as well, these are historic and these are big victories. The reality is, with a broken NLRB, with an administration right now that is hostile to labor, to organized workers, and, you know, saying that, you know, he hates his opponents, he views a lot of labor unions as their opponents. I fear that these attacks only get worse and more divisive. Do you feel as maybe
but
as I do?
The point I'm making, Rick, is that you have to keep on working.
Certainly.
And you have to keep on fighting.
Right.
And you can still win.
Right. This is where I was going. My hope is that even as you have to go over these higher hurdles, it builds the kind of solidarity and the kind of resolve to say that we want, we demand, we insist upon better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities, all of those things. That's where I was going.
You're absolutely right. It's all about solidarity.
You know, I say often that every generation has to rediscover it. And do you think we're rediscovering it?
I think we are. I think we're being forced into it because of what's going on around us. There is no choice other than coming together collectively and having a collective voice and taking collective action. There is no alternative. And we have to keep speaking up. Acquiescence is the very worst thing that can happen. We don't back away just because times are tough. We have to stay out there fighting. Yeah. And if we do that, we can make a difference.
So let me ask you this, because, look, I think you're on the right message. I think you're on the right path. I think Democrats haven't really come along yet, or at least I'm not seeing it. So how do you take this moment, because you're an advisor to the DNC, to the Democratic Party, how do you get them on board with going, look, this is what's really important. All that other stuff, yes, it's important, and we have to be on the right side of those things, but this is your bread and butter. This is the kitchen table stuff that gets you the ability to do the right stuff. Because I looked at the weekend, and I got to tell you, the messaging coming out of that memorial for Charlie Kirk was really ugly, divisive, rip this country apart kind of rhetoric. And I think if we want to reunite this country, we reunionize. What do you tell in the DNC?
Well, I think that it's about the way we talk to people and what it is that we're talking about. We need to be talking about, there are a lot of issues, even people we lost. Agree with their union siblings, with their union brothers and sisters on those issues. I went down to the Warrior Met picket line, and people had a strong populist message throughout that strike in Alabama. Strong populist message, things we agree on, the very heart and soul of the labor movement, and what a lot of them were wearing MAGA hats. And the message to me is that there's a lot we can agree on, and we have to be talking to people about what it is that's actually happening, the way we began today, about the economics, what's happening to their families, what's happening to their lives. And that's the way you start communicating with people. That is the focus of what we need to do. Donald Trump told working people he cared about them. And unfortunately, too many working people believed him, and it was a fraud. And we have to be talking about what it is that we need to do so people aren't earning less and affording less in the future. And I think the Democratic Party is their natural home.
No, I'm with you, but you gotta get to them. You gotta talk to them, because I think you're right. You've got to talk to them in their language, because I too was at the Warrior Met picket line when that was going on down in Alabama, and you were right. A lot of them supported Trump, but a lot of them believed that Trump cared about them, and they didn't hear, and there was no one to let them know that he wasn't on their side, and I fear that there still isn't. And this is where I think the Democrats have to get out there, use the bully pulpit, go in, as I said months ago, adopt a Republican district and start talking to those people. Even if you got to wear a sandwich board walking up and down the street, you've got to communicate with people where they are.
And I'll tell you, I think that the Democratic Party is understanding that. Now, I'm hearing more about unions, more about working people than I ever had before. They used to like to keep us in the closet. But now they want us out front, And I think that the only way that the Democratic Party is going to recover is by becoming more of a working person's party than it ever has before. There is no Democratic Party without the American labor movement.
There you go.
The Democratic Party didn't create the labor movement. The labor movement created the Democratic Party.
I've been saying that for a long time. But, Stuart, I appreciate the time. Keep up the great work. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again down the road.
Absolutely. And you, Rick, you keep up the great work because this is exactly what we need.
Appreciate the time. Stuart Applebaum, president of RWDSU. That is the retail, wholesale, and department store union. You can check out their website at rwdsu.org. I want to hear your thoughts. Do you see the Democrats as the party of working people? Are you seeing that union message? I want to hear it. Rick at therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. 97.5 WFHR, locally grown radio, and home to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman, mid-50s tonight with mostly cloudy skies. On your Wednesday, we'll see mostly cloudy skies and a high near 70 degrees. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, a low around 51. For Thursday, sunshine, mid-70s. On Friday, sunshine and a high around 77.
It's 64 at our studios.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, evidently, acetaminophen during pregnancy causes autism. Evidently, that's the newest bit coming out of RFK Jr.'s... look, yeah, here's the thing. Like, I'm not saying... I'm not saying that it doesn't. I'm not saying acetaminophen doesn't contribute potentially because I'm not a doctor or a researcher for that matter, but it seems a bit simplistic. You took Tylenol during pregnancy. That's the reason. Seems a bit simplistic and a nice way to blame women. Especially coming from the guy who advocated for introducing light and bleach into the body to kill COVID. Am I the only one who's looking at this administration and going, yeah, maybe not believe what they say? Maybe not buy what's coming out of their porthole? Maybe don't? Because this is the scary part. These are people who don't believe in government. They tell us this all the time. They don't believe government can or should do anything. And this... evidently, this is the grand, the big, the massive announcement that it's acetaminophen. If I'm getting this right, it's acetaminophen during pregnancy that causes autism. Wow. I mean, that's all I can come up with. And this is why we need, independent bureaucrats who are trained in their various fields. This is why we need independent groups in government to make sure that the political winds don't blow us into crazy, which is why we need to have independent agencies who have the autonomy to just do the work without worrying about the politics. Now, the weird part of this is our Supreme Court on Monday... it's one of these things. There's a ruling that allowed Trump to fire the Federal Trade Commission Commissioner Rebecca Slaughter without cause. And, well, there is a cause. The cause is that Rebecca was appointed by a Democrat. That's all the cause they need, right? Doesn't matter if she knows what she's doing. Democrat, the enemy. Remember, the people that Trump hates. And understand that we've had a precedent in this country that's been, you know, what, 90 years old? That says that we don't just fire people in these independent regulatory agencies willy-nilly, that they actually have to do something. There was a Supreme Court decision back in 1935, Humphrey's Executor, I think it was called, that established that the only way a president could remove a member from one of these independent agencies was for a reason, for misconduct, for cause, for inefficiency. Giving them the ability to just do their jobs without having to worry about which way the political winds were blowing, without being made to articulate your favorite Trump executive order. And this current ruling basically is undermining the protections that have been in place for, what, 90 years now? And making these folks at will. And understand, this ruling and the fact that they're taking this case forward, it's going to greatly expand executive power. The balance between the branches of government, not so much. You will see congressional safeguards being eroded incredibly. And the idea of them was, some bipartisanship, some bit of expertise could matter. Instead, what we're doing is we're moving to centralized control. We're the unitary executive will now have utter and total control over federal regulators, which you got to wonder. Going to damage the separations of power and the functions of the independent state, which means, dear leader, means you better know your favorite executive order. So when I asked a friend about this, who's a legal expert, and I said, what does this mean? And he's like, well, and he went through all of the concerns that I just laid out. The unitary executive now is going to have utter control. This is running government like a business. The boss is in charge, and everybody better fall in line or people get fired. Because now evidently acetaminophen, causes autism, which is weird, because I hadn't heard that one before. There are some studies that have some links, but what's that phrase about causation? Not necessarily. Never mind. Never mind. But I said, can't Congress overturn this? And he's like, well, of course, but the limitations of Congress. They can't pass a budget. They can't pass anything. You think you're going to get 2/3 of Congress to overturn a presidential veto on something that gives the president, the unitary executive, ultimate power? You really think that that's going to happen today? And the answer is, of course not. What was I thinking? And you go, but Rick, who are these independent groups? And why would a president want them? And there's a bunch of independent groups out there. I mean, the CIA is considered an independent group. Do you want the president having control of what intelligence we get? Because understand, the CIA gathers foreign intelligence and provides national security assessments. Do you want that based on dear leader? You want someone independent going, this is what we've found. Do you want them? Because understand, this is the weird world that we're in. My conservative friends believe that the president has that kind of power. They don't. They believe that Biden, put his fist on the scale and the CIA was in his pocket. No. And you can go down the list. I mean, the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, they regulate interstate and international communications, radio, TV, wire, satellite, cable. They're the reason you can't drop the F-bomb here. Do you really want what we just saw with Kimmel every day? Because you've got a at-will employee wanting to keep dear leader happy? What about the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, that insures deposits at banks? Should we make that political? Should that be based on the political wins? Yeah, we're going to help some people, but not you voted for Democrats. What about the FEC, the Federal Elections Commission? Should that be in the purview of dear leader? To enforce our campaign finance laws, which pathetic ones we have, and monitor elections? Do you really want a unitary executive having control over a system that's supposed to get them chosen? Really? I mean, we go down the list, the Federal Reserve System, which is our central bank, they conduct monetary policy. Do you want a president to have the power to be able to put the most extreme people on those? Federal Trade Commission, which again, this is kind of the world. Do you want someone who's supposed to be enforcing our antitrust laws, protecting consumers from deceptive business practices? Do you want the worst people leading that based on the political wins? And look, you know, the old live by the sword, die by the sword. I have friends who are like, well, yeah, we should get people in there going to be much more aggressive, go after. When the other side gets in, it's what they do. Or what about, you know, our employment law, the NLRB? Look what Trump has done there. Fired Gwen Wilcox, made the board non-functional. This is an organization that's supposed to protect employees' rights to organize and collectively bargain. They're the independent group that oversees this. It's now been neutered. What about OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Review Commission? They're the folks who look at enforcement actions, workplace safety decisions. They're those folks. Do you want the worst employers in charge of that? And we could go down the list. There are a bunch of these. The Social Security Administration. Do you want a privatizer in charge of the Social Security Administration? Of course not. But this is where they're moving us. And why is this important? It's important because this is how democracy ends. You know, I've had people go, well, you know, you're talking about, you know, the end of democracy and the rise of fascism. I go, yeah, it's not going to happen overnight. It's a creeping thing. It's like the frog in the water. You start changing the norms. You start changing the institutions. You now have an NLRB that's decidedly corporate so that workers don't even bother going there. You have a Federal Elections Commission that, well, rubber stamps every roadblock in the way to ensure certain groups don't have access. You have a Federal Trade Commission that actively seeks out to protect low road corporations and protect them from consumers. You have a banking system, a Federal Reserve System that, well, is just a slush fund. This is how you move towards a dictator. This is how you move towards authoritarian rule. And it's happening. You know, what do political scientists call it? Competitive authoritarianism. You know, it's not, you know, just doing away with the laws. It's just tweaking things. Just making things a little bit more friendly for business. A little more pro-business. A little more anti-worker. A little more pro-Republican, a lot more anti-Democrat. And we're seeing it right before our very eyes, because this Trump and this administration, it doesn't matter what the courts say. If they don't like it, they're not going to listen to it. You know, this started during the Bush years with the signing statements. Yeah, I signed this bill, but I know what it says, but I'm adding what I think. And as we allow this to continue, it's only going to get worse. Because understand, Trump is only going to get worse. If you've watched the progression of how just outrageous he has become, how untethered to reality he has become, how obnoxious, how outrageous he has become, it's because there's been nobody to stand up and say no. It's like a child in the cereal aisle. If you tell them no, they're going to throw a fit. but eventually they're going to stop. If you give in to their every whim, you give them every bit of candy and cereal and everything they want, they're only going to want more, and it's only going to get worse. That's kind of where we are. You know, look at over the weekend, the Truth Social post that went up and then got deleted that demanded that the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, go after his hit list, go after James Comey, go after Adam Schiff, go after Letitia James. Why? Because, well, they did bad things to me. You know, they prosecuted, they impeached me. I want them to go. And yet, I hear nothing from my friends on the right about how just obscene that is. And how, had Joe Biden ever muttered those words, they'd have lost their ever-loving freaking mind. This is a massive, massive abuse of power. The push for prosecutorial misconduct on steroids. This is a massive abuse of power. It has to happen because the president wants it. Now, understand, in any of these cases, you know, going after any of them, getting actual convictions, probably not going to happen. Even getting them indicted, probably not going to happen. What it is, and this is what corporate America has been doing for years, when they attack unions, they just give them busy work. You know, do all kinds of things just to keep unions fighting other battles instead of the ones that are in front of them. And this is what Trump has learned. And what he's really good at, he causes a bunch of fires, so the firemen are over here and over there and over there and over there, to where the real fire that he wants, nobody's noticing. So as he's causing all of this chaos, all of this nonsense, we don't really know how bad this administration's screwing working people in this country because we're too busy looking at all this other stuff. Targeting his enemies. And the people who probably should be targeted, you know, like our Homeland Security, our immigration czar, who evidently got caught last year accepting a literal bag of $50,000 in cash as a bribe. You've got the right gun. Yeah, I don't care about that. Not a big deal. What we are seeing, and this is the scary part in all this, what we are seeing is mob rule. I think I saw, you know, someone call it a mobocracy. This is strongman tactics. And not even, I guess give them credit. They're not even trying to hide it. Not even trying to hide it. And, you know, Trump said, you know, the other day in one of the interviews he did that, you know, they were going to go after Antifa and the people who fund them. So if you gave a donation to any group that was part of the resistance the last time around, if you bought the T-shirt that said the resistance on it, who knows? Do they find it and target everyone? And what they're going to do, and this is you know, so predictable. All of the things that they claimed Obama was doing to them, they're going to do to liberal groups, to others. Well, I shouldn't say just liberal groups. To anyone who has the audacity to resist. This is them saying... I forget who the guy who said it was, ran for governor in Texas years ago. It'll come to me in a minute. But there've been a couple of people who have said it over the years that, you know, if you're going to get raped, ladies, I guess men too, just lay back and enjoy it because it's inevitable. It's going to happen anyway. These are those people. And this is them basically saying, you know, we're going to do what we want. There's nothing you can do about it. And they're going to go after tax-exempt status. They're going to go after using the IRS as everything that they told their flock Biden was doing. Every bit of it. That, my friends, should scare the you-know-what out of every person, including my right-wing friends who love to believe that, you know, Biden was doing all these horrible things. It's quite scary times. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Let me know what you think. You ready for the mobocracy? You ready for authoritarian rule? You ready for our unitary executive? I want to hear it. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1906. That was the day that Dr. Harriet Louise Hardy was born in Arlington, Massachusetts. She pursued a career in medicine, driven by personal family tragedy. She lost her father to pneumonia when she was only 4 years old. She also lost a baby brother to the 1918 influenza outbreak. Dr. Hardy became an early leader in the field of occupational medicine. She was also the first woman to become a full professor at Harvard Medical School. Dr. Hardy began her career in occupational medicine when she began to investigate the causes of illness among workers making fluorescent lights in factories north of Boston. Many of these workers were women. Dr. Hardy researched the cases of berylliosis in Lynn and Salem, Massachusetts. The metal beryllium is used in the making of the lights. Inhaling dust or fumes of the metal can be deadly, but symptoms often do not begin to show up until years after exposure. Symptoms include shortness of breath, coughing, and scarred lungs. Dr. Hardy developed the National Beryllium Registry. It was one of the first registries of its kind to track the impact of a chronic health disorder. Her research helped lead to safety measures in the handling of this dangerous metal. Dr. Hardy also worked with unions, including the Oil, Chemical, and Atomic Workers Union and the United Mine Workers, to identify and address workplace health hazards. These included substances like lead, mercury, anthrax, and asbestos. She wrote a textbook on the subject of industrial toxicology with another pioneer in the field of occupational health, Dr. Alice Hamilton. Dr. Hardy helped to forge new ground in making job sites more safe and healthy for workers. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, the TikTok deal, kind of interesting question that keeps coming up. One that I asked a long time ago when someone said, you know, Donald Trump's going to take it over and we're going to make an American company, you know, get the I'm like, okay, and look, I'm more in favor of an American company over a Chinese company. But are you comfortable with the Trump government? Red hats, are you comfortable with hand-picked Trump loyalists being in charge of TikTok? Look, again, you could argue better than the Chinese communist government having access to all your information and feeding your children propaganda. But really? This is where my mind goes. Really? Are we not concerned that we're simply swapping Chinese surveillance of our children for American surveillance? Is this not potentially something of concern for people? Because look, you know, especially my Red Hat Brigade, you should be honest with yourself. You've been against government for a long time. You've been against government ownership. You've been against socialism for a very, very long time. Gotta wonder. Gotta worry. I know I do. Do we have any concern? I want to hear it. I want to hear your thoughts on the whole TikTok deal, because Oracle is now saying that they're going to, because they're part of this, that they're going to recreate and provide security for the new TikTok, which, I don't know. I don't know enough about it but I'm uncomfortable when this government, run by our unitary executive, puts together this kind of a sweetheart deal for his loyalists, for his funding crowd. Makes me uncomfortable, and I got to imagine other folks as well. So I want to hear your thoughts. You comfortable with the U.S. government, this U.S. government, having that kind of surveillance power? Kind of makes me wonder. Want to hear it. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Also, I want to finish up today with a shout-out to the steelworkers and the machinists who are on strike at Libby Glass in Toledo, Ohio. It's been over a month now that these workers have gone out on strike fighting for better wages, hours, conditions. And as I looked into it, and we're working on trying to get someone to come and share some thoughts on what's going on there. Again, another one of these examples of company got into trouble, bankruptcy, gave a bunch of concessions, lots of millions, many millions to help bail this company out, put it back on its feet, get it moving in a direction, only to be told, sorry, it was a nice gesture on your part. No. Now they've gone even further. The strike, like I said, has gone over a month. And evidently a communication was sent out to the workers by Libby Glass, and someone was nice enough to send it along to me. It's dated September 22nd, 2025. And the communication says, as we heard from many of you, no one, there may be concerns that you will be terminated for returning to work. You will not be terminated for crossing the picket line. You'll just be a scab. You will not be terminated when the strike is over for crossing the picket line. If you would like to return to work, please contact us at 567-249-3751. That number again is 567-249-3751. I think people should call and remind them that no worker should ever cross a picket line. No one should ever become a scab because the company tells them it's okay. And if you want to email the company who's promoting their workers become scabs, it's informhr@libby.com. It would be nice if people reached out and shared with Libby Glass. Given the fact, again, I go back to what just happened with Jimmy Kimmel and ABC. This would be a nice chance for all of us to reach out to Libby Glass and say, you know what? Get back to the bargaining table. Respect your workers. Get them the contract that they earn. Pay them what they're worth and move forward. Again, the number is, get your paper and pencil, 567-249-3751. Call and say, hey, look, we stand with the workers. We want you to get a good contract. We want you to be a good company, a high road employer who does right by their employees so that we can proudly buy an American-made, union-made product. I buy Libby Glass products all the time. The hope is that we use the power that we have. In fact, email if you want to, informhr@libby.com. That's informhr, little at symbol, libby.com. And tell them, hey, we stand with these workers. Because it says, look, if and they also say, look, if you want to know more, if you'd like to understand any union responsibilities, you can request a copy of your union bylaws. I suggest you do that. And constitution from your union leadership. I suggest that. You should know what your bylaws are. Should know your constitution. The more information workers have, the better. The more solidarity, the better. But this is one of those moments where we as working people, we as viewers of this program, listeners of this program, have an opportunity to get involved, stand shoulder to shoulder with people who are out there fighting for better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities, a better life for you, me, us, them. This is one of those moments. You want something to do. This is that little bit of solidarity, that little action. I think it's a good thing. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Make sure you check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. And thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. President Trump, addressing the UN General Assembly, criticizes European allies over green energy, immigration, and other issues. On the sidelines, he has met with Ukraine's president. CBS's Ed O'Keefe reports that Trump now says he believes Ukraine, with the help of NATO, can win back all territory lost to Russia.
This is a reversal from a president who has spent much of the last several months suggesting that Ukraine and Russia would probably have to cede territory in order to get to some kind of an agreement to end the war. But now, coming out of this meeting today, suggesting that Ukraine could get everything back is a stark departure. Music to the ears of the Ukrainians, a relief to the Europeans who would like to see that happen, and obviously not great news for Vladimir Putin, but a signal that the president now shifting his position on this.
During a meeting with Arab leaders, the war in Gaza was the topic of conversation, and President Trump says,
"We want to end the war in Gaza."